It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins. We are quite often talking with his partner, Wes Collins. HarvellandCollins.com, by the way, is their website. And I'm going to very quickly remind you the phone number, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. But today we're joined by Cecil Harvell. And Cecil, last week we were talking about the process of preparing and qualifying for Medicaid coverage in the cases of long-term care. And that leads me to a question related to a situation where a family, children particularly, might suddenly discover they're dealing with a situation that no one expected. A parent, for example, has a massive stroke or some life-changing situation which forces that individual into long-term care. And of course, the quite often we hear about this needing to purchase insurance, but also preparing for these kind of eventualities. And so let's talk here. I'm curious about this. You've often said, for example, and it was brought up last week, the possibility of creating a trust. And I know that you and I've talked on several occasions, and you've said the creation of a trust has to be for a purpose. You just don't arbitrarily, you personally and your firm doesn't arbitrarily just say, well, let's create a trust. You do it for intentional purposes. But let's talk about this in relationship to those unexpected circumstances. And by the way, as I make this long introduction, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. Hey, it's good to talk to you. Lockwood, I think, you know, you've got lots of point. Your long introduction is a great one because it brings up lots of different but related issues. And one of the issues right out of the gate this afternoon is just, you know, it's so important not to wait until there is an emergency, until we are in, God forbid, the emergency room or the intensive care unit or wherever we might be, even potentially already in a long-term care facility or rehab facility. You know, ironically, just yesterday, one of the appointments on the calendar was, I think, a younger lady, younger girl, if you will, you know, probably 30, 40 years old, who was in town trying to help her father, and she just knew absolutely nothing, was not certain that he had a power of attorney or a will or anything of that nature. And of course, he was in the hospital and in intensive care, I might add. These are the circumstances where I encourage our listeners to realize that that is just not where we want to be. It's not where we want to put a family member or a loved one in a position where they just don't have any documents, they don't have a power of attorney, they don't have a health care power of attorney, they know nothing about the location of a last will and testament. I mean, these are facts of life, Lockwood, as you have brought up. I mean, all of us are going to need these kinds of documents at some point, and it's important that we get them done, you know, at a time when we can understand them. The problem with the gentleman yesterday in the hospital is that he may very well now at this point not be competent. He might not be able to sign documents. He might not be able to understand them. He certainly isn't going to understand them and appreciate them as we would like for him to when he's under dire circumstances, such as, you know, a very significant hospitalization. We want clients to come in when they are alert and happy and pleased with the outcome of their documents, and they understand the paragraphs in the document. Mm-hmm. They understand the effect of what they're signing. They are able to ask questions. They're able to understand the planning that we do. Like, for instance, we're going to go here in a minute to trust. You brought that up, Lockwood. But you know, people, it's important that folks understand what they're signing and that they understand the effect of the documents and how it is going to help their family. I like to say one of the things that I say, Lockwood, in appointments is that, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, we want to have these tools in your toolbox. Mm-hmm. If for some reason you are in a long-term care facility, a nursing home, mm-hmm. and it's costing you $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a month, then we want to have the tool in the toolbox that your children can use, most likely via the power of attorney, because you might not be doing very well right. at that time. And so through the use of a well-drafted power of attorney, your son or daughter is able to locate the trust agreement that we've created for you several years back. We're able to find that tool in the toolbox, bring it out, and now really be able to utilize it to protect your assets from the devastating cost of a $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a month right. Nursing home expense. Now, if we don't have that tool in the toolbox, and we all know that, you know, isn't it frustrating to go to your toolbox and look right. for, you know, the Phillips screwdriver, and lo and behold, you only have the flat one. You don't right. have the Phillips head. You know, it's frustrating. Where is it? Where did it go? It's the same concept. Yeah. If we don't have this trust in the toolbox, then we likely will be unable to have a positive result for this family. Hmm. So let's plan ahead. Let's understand our documents. Let's not wait until we are in distress or under the medical supervision of a doctor in an emergency room or in an intensive care unit. Those are just not optimal circumstances.
You know, the other aspect of this, and of course, we, you know, most families are husband and wife. So we quite often think about this in relationship to the husband or the primary breadwinner, if you will. And it could be the wife as well. But we also need to consider this, I guess, in relationship to the other member of the family as well. The concept of creating these documents, Cecil, they're not just for a single person, are they? I mean, obviously it identifies a single person, but right. you've got to think about this in a broader perspective, don't you?
Well, you absolutely do. For instance, Lockwood, in the asset protection planning arena, in the nursing home right. conversation, so many times the husband or wife will say, well, that's my IRA, or those are my CDs. Those are titled in my name. Uh-huh. Or even a son or daughter who might come to the appointment and say, well, now mom and dad put me on the account too. I'm also added on the account mm-hmm. at the bank or with the stock company. Well, you know, Lockwood, those are all good things for certain purposes, but for Medicaid planning, uh-huh. it doesn't matter whose name is on the account. In order to qualify for some assistance with the payment of a nursing facility, they are going to look at the assets of the family unit. The family unit is the mother and the father if they're both still living, and it doesn't matter whose name is on the IRA or the 401k or the life insurance or the bank account. It doesn't matter. The Medicaid offices are going to look at the accounts and say, well, even though they might be exclusively in the husband's name, they are available for the care of the wife. This, you all are married, you've been married for a long time, they are marital assets, and so your assets are available for your husband, your husband's assets are available for you, the wife. And so we have to look at both persons in the household and combine their assets together and then start putting the puzzle together to come up with an optimal plan.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and I want to go back to the introduction of the program. I commented that in earlier conversations with Cecil, and again, I would commend to those listening, don't hesitate to make a phone call and have similar conversations, but in conversing with Cecil, he mentioned that he's always hesitant just to create a trust because of that seems to be the standard thought, but a trust with an intention. And so as we continue the program here with Cecil, again, Harvell and Collins is their website, Harvell and, spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, I want to go to this concept then of the creation of a trust. Do you
Sure.
You mentioned that last week in our conversations, and of course, it was a matter of how can Medicaid be a participant in long-term care? And of course, there are, I'm sure, other instances where, frankly, families need to be very wise about how they structure their family's finances so as to benefit and or avoid outstanding risks and expenses. What is the role of a trust in this case, and what are we talking about in essence?
I think it begins with the idea that a client comes to a lawyer and the lawyer will confidentially solicit the facts that particularly pertain to that client. Names, addresses, family, generational family, like, for instance, two children, but how many grandchildren? Maybe one child doesn't have any children, but the other child has two children. These are important things to know. So to know the family tree, if you will. Then, of course, a brief explanation of assets. This doesn't have to be down to the penny or anything like that, but just in general, let's talk about your real estate assets, land assets, home assets, apartments, condos. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your bank assets in the bank. And then let's talk about any kind of investment assets, and let's divide those between retirement assets and just after-tax stock or mutual funds that you happen to own. Mm-hmm. Now, again, Lockwood, I don't want to scare anybody away. We can get this information over the several weeks after we start working on your file, but the bottom line is just some semblance of understanding of where this client sits in terms of assets. In other words, the puzzle is going to be put together in a different way for a client with, you know, $400,000, $500,000, $900,000 worth of net worth versus a client with, you know, $5,000,000, $6,000,000, $7,000,000, $8,000,000, $9,000,000 right. worth of assets. Okay. Right. The puzzle is going to look different depending on the circumstances that the client presents. This is why sometimes just over the telephone, we're unable to quote a price. Uh-huh. A fee quote, Lockwood, right out of the gate, because we don't even know the circumstances mm-hmm. yet. We don't know what the puzzle is going to look like. Let me hasten to say that after we know, after the first conference, what the puzzle is going to look like, which we will after the very first conference, we then will be able to quote an attorney fee, and we will abide by that attorney fee. And if you don't choose to hire us based on that quote and that attorney fee, then that's your prerogative. Right. But we do have to sit down with you at least one time and get the facts and circumstances so that we know what the puzzle of your life is going to look like. Now, we are very quick to say we are not going to jump right into or suggest a trust just for the sake of creating a trust. Mm-hmm. There has to be something for us to hang our hat on, Lockwood. There has to be a justifiable reason why we would suggest a trust in a family. It used to be that we used trust to mitigate estate tax. Mm-hmm. Estate tax was at $600,000, $1 million, $1.5 million. Many clients were subject to those kinds of numbers, and we'd use trust in order to help with the estate tax mitigation. The estate tax now, Lockwood, has escalated up to $11 million per individual. And so we are not using trust as readily in, of course, Eastern North Carolina as we used to for estate tax purposes, because clients in Eastern North Carolina, you know, many of them do not have those kinds of assets. Those that do, we handle, and we know how to handle, you know, a $15 million client. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that most of our clients are under that threshold. Right. And if that's the case, then we might want to talk with that client about asset protection planning or to take care of any kind of long-term care expense mm-hmm. that they might have. So, again, we're not going to jump to a trust unless we have a reason for it. Sometimes, Lockwood, folks have family reasons. Uh-huh. They have a child that has struggled with addiction issues. Mm-hmm. They have a child that they're very concerned about that child's spouse for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. They have a child that is handicapped, special needs trust, or things of that nature. So, again, We listen very carefully to the facts of the client. We listen to what their objectives, what their concerns are, and then we fit those objectives and concerns into a plan of action, and then we proceed to quote a price as to what that we think might cost for the client, and then we, from that standpoint, begin the process of preparing those documents.
Now, in the case of a trust, I'm curious, is it something that you revisit on a regular basis? We've talked about this, and of course, many regards, this is in relationship, quite frankly, to even, and you said advanced planning. Will and you're setting up our wills, and you've said that we need to periodically revisit our wills. What about this? Does that same hold true with trusts as well? What is the justification for revisiting the whole issue of trusts as well?
I think all of our documents, Lockwood, need to be looked at about every 5 to 7 years. Okay. Fiduciaries, that's the person that we've appointed as trustee or agent under the power of attorney or executor in the will. Sometimes these folks are no longer with us. They have died. Sometimes they have aged, and it's not in our best interest that, you know, like someone may have named their brother or sister, and their brother or sister, like the client, is now, you know, 80 years old. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes circumstances change with children and their marriages, with our grandchildren and their needs or their issues of life, and we're concerned again about different twists and turns of the life of a child or a grandchild, which then can affect our documents. So let's just look at them every 5 to 7 years. It doesn't mean that they have to be changed automatically. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean that I'm not saying that every 5 to 7 years, let's redo your documents. I see clients routinely every single week who I saw 5, 7, 10 years ago. And we go through the documents, which doesn't take very long, all of about 30 minutes. And I would say, you know, 75 to 85% of the time, Lockwood, there's no change. Uh-huh. They're just fine. But there's that comfort that now the client has of knowing, gosh, Cecil, you've given me a clean bill of health again for another 5 to 7 years. I'll let you know if any major circumstance occurs in our family, but I'm so glad that I'm still up to date and that everything is okay. So, you know, we're supposed to go to the physician every year. Uh-huh. I would say go to your attorney, you know, every 5 to 7 and just dust off the documents and look at them and see what you see. But sometimes we need to make a change and other times we do not. But the trust would be right in, to answer your question specifically, Lockwood, the trust would be right in there with the power of attorney, the will, the health care proxy. If there's a change in one, there might need to be a change in the trust. We'll just have to see.
That leads me to the question, and we've talked about this numerous occasions, about executors and appointment of those who are going to be responsible for fulfilling the demands, the services, the expectations of a will or something of this nature, power of attorney. Is it unusual or normal to have different trustees versus different executors and folks responsible for such things as power of attorneys? Is it common to have one person who is both the trustee and the executor, for example? What is the process there?
The process is that we want you, the client, right, to consider who would be the if you will, the chosen fiduciary. Mm-hmm. Fiduciary is the broad word for all the things that you just mentioned. We're going to talk about that, but right now, but executor, trustee, power of attorney, agent, those are your fiduciaries, uh-huh, okay? And we want you to choose the one in the family, hopefully, that you feel will step up to the plate and honor your life and your documents. They do not have to live in the state of North Carolina. Right. That is a common misunderstanding. I would rather have the one that you think will do the better job living in California than the one that you think might not come to appointments and might not be so responsible that lives in Newport.
Right.
Let's find the best one for the job, and then we're not going to worry about necessarily where they live. The next thing Lockwood, is that we don't want to jump all around with different fiduciaries and different documents. Like, okay, let's take, for instance, the power of attorney and the executor. If the power of attorney agent is going to know what bills have been paid, what tax returns have been filed, they're the ones who know all of the information with regard to our banking relationship because they're taking care of us in our elder ages. Well, then it makes sense that that same person then serve as the executor, mm-hmm, because they have the information, don't they, Lockwood? Right. They know where the accounts are. They know what bills got paid. They know what tax returns have or have not been filed. And so if you name one person as power of attorney, but yet a different person as executor, the executor has to start all anew and find out exactly what has and has not been done from the agent under the power of attorney.
Oh.
So to coordinate the fiduciary consistently through your documents is certainly what we are going to look at and potentially be able to recommend to you when we're kind of putting the puzzle together for clients.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the health care is different. Sometimes people will say, well, you know, my daughter is a CPA. She'll be a wonderful executor, but our son is a physician. And so we obviously are going to name our son, who is in the medical community, as mm-hmm. as our medical proxy.
Right.
But under the financial side, your trustee, your executor, your power of attorney, it would not be unusual for us to, once we land on a person, Lockwood, to name them consistently in each of those documents. Now, we know we have to have an alternate to this person. We can't just name one person,
right,
because we have to have alternates.
I was thinking about the issue of then the trustee and the executor is in a normal circumstance. Now,
uh-huh,
you mentioned earlier, and I will call them unusual, abnormal circumstances, where you have a family member, let's just say that the surviving family member is in somehow restricted in their abilities, either you mentioned possibly addiction services or possibly,
right,
they've impaired in some way. In those circumstances, then you would have a third party as a trustee. Would you also have a third party as an executor in those cases?
Yeah, you would. You would. Again, we would stay consistent,
okay,
in the fiduciary appointments, Lockwood, if at all possible, because that these documents are kind of hand in glove,
uh-huh,
the power of attorney, the executor under the will, the trustee under the trust. They are all, you know, they're all, you know, first cousins,
uh-huh,
okay, if you will.
Right. Okay.
And so hand in glove, if we can name the same fiduciary consistently in the documents, then great. Now, you know, Lockwood, like everything, there are always exceptions to
Twist,
the rule.
Right.
But absent an exception, we would try to keep the fiduciaries consistent.
All right. I think that what we're hearing from our host this afternoon, and that, of course, is Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins, is planning. And the purpose of the planning is to, of course, at the outset, make sure that it meets the expectations of those that are the clients in this case, the people who are setting up the plans for their children and grandchildren, et cetera. And as we heard just a moment ago, the possibility of creation of trust specific purposes. Cecil, I do appreciate your time. I want to remind folks, go to their website, harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com, or give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050. And with that, Cecil, good afternoon to you.
Thank you, Lockwood. I enjoyed it.
Let's talk legal.